Name, Jason Horsley. Profession, Limitless. This is The Limitless, the podcast in between. You are now listening. You can walk an island way and you will call the rolling dust. Your eyes were staring at me while playing your guitar.
I came walking a long way, just for another chap. Then I saw her in the crowd and I looked her in the eyes.
Okay, are you there?
I'm here still, yes. How can you hear me okay now?
Well, sort of. Kind of muffled. What is your name again?
My name's Jason Horsley. We corresponded very, very briefly, like 10, 15 years ago after I wrote Matrix Warrior.
Okay, now your name is Jason.
Yeah.
And your last name is what?
Horsley.
Horsley?
Yes, Horsley.
Well, poetry?
No, Horsley, like a horse, like a
horse. Oh, Horsley. Okay, and where do you live?
I'm living in Canada right now.
What town?
It's a little town called Hope in British Columbia.
Well, I haven't been there. So what's up with you?
What's up with me? You mean what do I want to talk about?
Yes.
Well, I thought we'd get straight to it and talk about what it's like for you now that you're 89 and what life is like. Just focus on the moment seemed to be the best way to start.
Well, at 89, every day above ground is a good day. And I have just been just about as busy as ever. I'm not traveling and talking anymore, simply because I don't get along that well traveling, and the last few times I tried were enough for me. Traveling is a pain in the neck these days. So I don't go anywhere. I stay right here. I'm perfectly happy here. I don't need to go anywhere else. And people come by to talk with me, and that's always nice. I like to have company. And they write stuff about what I've said, and generally I didn't agree with part of it, but I don't know what to say about it. Other than that, it's nice to. I have one of my brothers lived to be 90, the other lived to be 92, and my mother lived to be 95. So I figure odds are that I've got. Probably this will wind me up. I'll call it quits if I make 90. But aside from that, I think that I am astonished in ways I never was before. I'm just astonished at how beautiful the earth is and how wonderful people are. I think it's the richest period of my whole life, and I have been all over the place. I am not boasting, but I sat down one day and figured out I had given a minimum of 2,000 talks in 12 different countries, and it was fun. I enjoyed it all. I'm not a tourist. All those places I would go, most of them I remember as an airport and a microphone. That's about it. And that was all right with me, too. So, enough said for that. And how do you spend your time?
Well, I'm 48, and I keep very busy. I was just listening to a conversation you gave an interview from a couple of years back, whenever it was, and you were talking about how our culture, how we're enculturated with a feeling of failure, a feeling of being unworthy, and we're constantly driven to try and prove ourselves. And that certainly struck home for me because I'm acutely aware of that, and I've become more aware of it as I'm aging, a little bit of wisdom, becoming more aware of this, let's say, neurotic drive to prove myself. And yet, the awareness doesn't seem to prevent me from continuing to be quite compulsively creative. So I'm always writing another book or doing another podcast or creating another website. And yeah, one of the things I was curious to talk to you about was, I presume that at 89, there's an easing off of that drive, and an ability to just be more accepting of oneself and the moment, and kind of an opening up, a more spacious
Well,
experience of.
no, I have never. I mean, all my talk with, so far as I remember, as far as we go, I've talked about the incredible capacity we have that never gets expressed. I talked about unconflicted behavior, where we can behave without conflict within, because most of us. Our behavior is determined by what we would like to do, but what they might say. And so we get split right down the middle. And I was at age 17 talking about unconflicted behavior, that I found that I could just throw myself away, throw my sense of self and how important self is away. I could do things that I could never do before. And I did all sorts of absolutely from that point on was involved in one way or another with the quite out of the ordinary kinds of action, and only because it was there, it came along, it was fun, and so at 89, I'm only well, sorry that I don't have the energy to do all the things that I used to do, but I don't have and. And so I'm kind of winding up here, and can only look back and say it's been an incredible journey. I've loved every minute of it. I have no complaints. I have no complaints of the world out there that's trying to kill itself. People do what they want to do. They do what they feel they have to do. And I never felt what I had to do. I did whatever. Whatever came along. And I mean it really from adolescence on, I just said whatever came along. And even though it would bring censorship or attention from my peers and others, I didn't care. I did whatever I was prompted to do inside, and I was finding out a lot of things, but at the time I got out of the Army Air Corps in World War II, I knew an awful lot. I knew how, if we put ourselves in a certain frame of mind, we were absolutely invulnerable. We couldn't be hurt, and so there was nothing to be afraid of. And I must say, I've never been afraid of anything like that in my life. I might be afraid of my wife scolding occasionally, or oh, but I'm being silly. No, this has been a wonderful trip. 89. I could keep going for a long time, but on the other hand, I've had my share of it, and I'll leave this world happily, and I know exactly what happens then, because I've been, as in this past year or so, I've been drifting into these twilight zones that are breathtaking. I some of them are so beautiful. I've awakened weeping over the intense beauty that I find. So it's been a great adventure, still is, and I expect it to keep on.
You were describing what seemed to be an inner, perhaps preparation is not the word, but an inner movement towards death while still alive. I think that that's a very heartening kind of thing to hear about.
Well, but I've been in that position since adolescence. I discovered what I called unconflicted behavior. If I could throw away my sense of self to be protected and nurtured and all that, and just follow this other hunch within me, I could do all sorts of things. Totally impossible things. I found that fire couldn't burn, that gravity didn't have to hold me. Lord, the time I went up that cliff in Palos Verdes, California, and the whole thing, stuff that was considered ordinarily totally impossible. And uh-huh. I could do it because I had no conflict within myself. And because I had nothing to protect, nothing to hide, and nothing to worry about. And with that, when I say it is true, I found that fire didn't have to burn me, gravity didn't have to hold me, and all sorts of things like that. And at times, if necessary, I didn't have to eat. I never went more than 21 days, I believe it was, without food. And I realized then that you could go totally and indefinitely without food, but I like to eat, so I did. I'm thinking of, what was her name, the architect that had her great experience, went over to Berlin to continue being an architect, and she had the stigmata appear, and at the same time, now she was 24, 25 at the time, at the same time the stigmata appeared on her body, she found that food made her violently ill. And she has, to this day, never eaten again. She went back to Berlin and is practicing architecture. But I have close friends who've been over there to see her a couple of times because they think she's magical. And it's true. And she tells us that we don't have to eat in order to live. And as the human race just realized that it would change every tiny facet of contemporary culture, structure of government, and so on and so forth. And I think our culture and our structure of government, all that, is a disaster. I think it's horrible. I think we're doing enormous damage to the earth, in spite of the fact that we know the earth is a living organism, and we're doing terrible things to it. And I keep saying, well, the earth will recoil one of these days from what we're doing to it. But nevertheless, I find, all I can say is that I found it an enormously exciting trip. The only things I've been afraid of that I can think of in my life was possibly censorship from some of my family. I don't like them to get angry with me, and I try to keep from doing that. But it's just a great trip to take, and I don't think she'd ever stop. And I'm sure when finally they have to put me 6 feet under, that this other thing continues because I've been in it too many times.
What do you mean by this other thing?
This part of us, our spirit, which is also our sense of self and our sense of awareness and everything else, in our spirit, and our spirit is indestructible. And the things that our spirit can experience, if it's free of the fear of this body getting hurt, or fear of censorship from other people, free of all that fear, there's just no end. There's no end to it at all for us. It just opens up one continual new reality experience after another. And these are great times. It's nothing to poo-poo. On the other hand, to think that there are many people who live only in fear and worry and concern about their finances and their position and what people think of them, that's just too bad, because meanwhile, their spirit, which is their real sense of identity, can just, it's just, there are no limits to it. The human being is the greatest thing that was ever invented, is the way to put it. I found it an enormous adventure. It doesn't stop. I spent a lot of time apparently sleeping, but most of the time I'm not sleeping. I'm sort of enjoying this other aspect of things. So if we as a species just knew the incredible. Life there is for us right within us. It's not somewhere else. It's within this own brain line complex we've got. The incredible things it can do.
Mm.
So, and what do you do up in Canada?
I'm currently renovating a house. My wife and I bought this very old, rundown house, and we've been renovating it. That's why I was late today. And then otherwise, I would say self-employed, except that I don't pay myself a wage, so it doesn't really count. But I do my creative stuff. I write books and work on the internet and do these podcasts and make videos and just all kinds of creative stuff that keeps
and
me
you
endlessly
write books?
Busy. Yeah.
You say you
yeah.
write books?
Yeah, you actually read one of mine, but whether you will remember or not, it was called Matrix Warrior, Being the One, and you read it many years ago, and you were nice enough to write me an email about it, and yeah.
It was called what?
Matrix Warrior. It was inspired by the movie The Matrix, which is about living in a computer-generated fantasy world.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote a sort of philosophical, slightly tongue-in-cheek critique, which was on society, which was also based on the works of Carlos Castaneda, somewhat.
Oh. Well, that's interesting.
Hmm.
And so what was it that you thought I might be able to help you with?
Well, last time we spoke, you talked about when you were, I think you said 17, that you discovered that if you didn't put yourself first and if you weren't concerned overly with your own self-interest, that that freed you up in surprising ways. And I wondered if this related to the thesis that you developed later on, and that's in, I imagine it's in all your books, but certainly the ones I've read, that adolescence is supposed to be a time of natural, biologically sourced enlightenment, or what gets called enlightenment, which is the letting go of the identity or the ego and the opening of the heart and just becoming, well, whatever it is. I can't speak from experience, unfortunately. So would you say that's actually an experience that you had in your teenage years?
Well, indeed. In fact, I was just reading about the last major change in actual brain growth and all takes place from around 16 to 21. But after age 21, there's no further change in the actual growth in all of the brain system. That it settles in with what it has is what it's got from that point on. And so that you read about that. And you've written books.
Indeed.
How many books? I mean, what are the names of them? Tell me again.
Oh, gosh. Well, some of them are about cinema, and then others are more esoteric. So I've written a book called Secret Life of Movies, which is like a psychological study. Recently a book about seen and not seen, which is about how the way that we construct our identities is influenced by our culture, by pop culture, by the movies we see and the music we listen to, and how it all gets mixed up, the fantasy and and the reality.
Well, I find that very interesting indeed. And you've had that book published and stuff?
That just came out this year, yeah. It's also about autism, which was something I also wanted to talk to you about, because I'm on the autistic spectrum myself, at least I consider myself to be. I was listening to a talk you gave a couple of years ago where you talked about how it's natural for children, small children and older children even, to have periods of just blank-eyed gazing. They just sit and gaze at nothing, and how this is just a natural practice for a child and part of their development. And that of course relates to many autistic children are just naturally in this what I call unfocused awareness. They're not focused on the objects of the world, they're focused on the inner, on what's going on internally. So that's an area that interests me a great deal, like how much our attention is trapped by the external world, by culture, and it's kind of torn away from where it needs to be so much of the time, which is on the inner.
Now you're using the term autistic. In what sense? Could you give me your definition of autistic?
That's a good question. It's a difficult one. The most simple definition for me is actually the root word auto, which is self, and how autism, you know, as a diagnosis, related to observing these children who were immersed in their own interiority. So that's a very wide definition that I have, which agrees with somewhat with the diagnosis, probably the only part that does agree. More specifically, I see autism as an alternate way of perceiving the world and the self. So I see it as perceptual.
Seeing the world what now? Say that last part again.
Seeing the world and seeing the self in a radically different way. So one thing about autism is that it relates to socialization, which of course what a lot of your writing is about, and the autists, they won't let themselves be socialized because they don't imitate behavior. So because they don't take the social program or the cultural program, their perception is very different. They perceive the world without that filter of socialized thinking. It might even be language based, I think, because a lot of autists don't speak.
Well, I find that certainly a fascinating subject, and it, you start following that out and you end up in some pretty interesting observations. I'm sure you have done just that.
Yeah, well, and also, I mean, what I read in your work, I read your work many years before I knew about autism, and certainly before I considered myself to be on the spectrum. But then I read Magical Child more recently, and one of the things that really stood out was how you observed, or you reported the findings that when children learn language, it's not just a mental thing, that it affects them biologically, that they develop physical kind of micro movements that correspond with language. So it's as if language is actually going into the body itself.
Yes. And that is the actual... Do you still feel that that's the actual case?
I do. I mean, it's a very mysterious thing, but... Yes, I think I have a visceral experience of it because, for example, autists can be very sensitive to not just their environment but their inner behavior. So if some autists tell a lie, they begin to suffer in their body. They feel pain in their body. And I've had body pains for my whole adult life, and quite early on I noticed that it related to my thoughts, my thinking. So a certain kind of thinking seemed to cause or increase the tension in my body. It was a difficult thing to actually map out correctly, but I could just see there was definitely a relationship, and I began to understand that my physical pain and illness was a result of my thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, of course, language.
I've had a couple of experiences where something breaks in on your, not your thinking, but it's a whole other mindset that can actually just break in and take over. And one is just a witness of, but not a, one doesn't generate it, but simply witnesses. And if you had that kind of a thing, you're just a witness of it rather than the generator of it?
I do. I mean, I know what you're describing. I it's very subtle, because, like most people, I imagine I've learned to identify with my thoughts. So even if they are coming from outside of me, I immediately identify with them. And so it's like there's this small space in between the thought and the awareness where the identification occurs. And if I'm not careful, I miss that space. Yeah, is the short answer. When something particularly negative, when I get taken over by a very negative sort of cloud of thoughts, then I become aware that this isn't being generated internally, it seems.
Well, now this, I find this really fascinating, because I do think that we occasionally, things break in on us that are not of our own doings. They're almost like a completely foreign thought. And we wonder how we could have thought such a thing, but I don't think we do. I think we simply perceive it, because the whole thing of the Alice trying to connect it up with this new interest in the Akashic field. You've read on that, I'm sure.
I have, yeah.
Yeah, that has a lot of possibilities in it. I think also it's a dangerous kind of a thing to monkey around with, because I can see how one would get almost lost in such a thing and not being able to find your way back to your ordinary identity. Is that a possibility?
You mean lost in the Akashic records, you mean? And how do you relate the Akashic records to these thoughts that are coming out of nowhere? I mean, can you say more about that?
It just seems to be kind of a catch-all. At times, I think it's just a junk heap. But at other times, I find that it's some pretty valuable. I don't think it's been explored. I don't think it's been thoroughly mapped out. And I think recently, I'm trying to think what it was, I just very recently read along that same line. There's an interesting little book. In fact, I have a copy of it right here. I might have mentioned it to you before. And this was suggested to me by a gentleman from Scotland. And in fact, he gave me a copy of it. It's by a David Abraham, a Jewish guy. It's a brilliant work. And it's called The Spell, S-P-E-L-L, The Spell of the Sensuous. If you get a chance, pick that book up. I think you would find in it an answer to an awful lot of things that you're at least hinting toward. The Spell of the Sensuous. And it's by David Abraham, Abrams rather. And boy, it opens up one of the just most extraordinarily rich areas of thought, and I would heartily recommend it. I've read it a couple of times. It's not an easy read. It's a difficult work, simply because it's so different in its whole slant on things. But it's simply that the sensuous is anything which would attract our mind. That's the sensuous. And the spell it creates is that we have to do something with it within our own mind brain setup in order to find out what it involves. And so it really creates quite a spell, and that's a good enough term on it. I found it a very exciting thing, even here at my almost 90, I can still find things that are exciting, and this is certainly one of them.
I open the door and my back is killing me, and I don't think that I can make it through the week. But then I remember I have something to help my way, some white and blues, and I don't care if I stay. And I've already lost my way, and I've already lost my way, and I've already lost my way. Oh no, oh no, oh no. White and blues will ease the pain as it goes through. White and blues will put your mind at ease too. White and blues, double B's are on my mind. White and blues, 20 minutes I'll be fine. And when I'm numbed out and my dreams are all gone, I can walk around with a smile so long. As long as I get that paycheck, 'cause it really brings me down when I am in debt. And I've already lost my way, and I've already lost my way, and I've already lost my way. Oh no, oh no. White and blues will ease the pain as it goes through. White and blues will put your mind at ease too. White and blues, double D's are on my mind. White and blues, 20 minutes I'll be fine. Well, I guess it ain't so bad, still got a place to stay, and I still have women coming in every day. I still got Tim, I still got you, but sex and drugs won't always help me through. And I've already lost my way, and I've already lost my way, and I've already lost my way. Oh no, oh no, oh no. White and blues will ease the pain as it goes through. White and blues will put your mind at ease too. White and blues, double B's are on my mind. White and blues, 20 minutes I'll be fine.
So in an email to me, Joe, Karen, what Karen said was that you're interested now in, particularly in states of consciousness that we can experience if we don't think about our relation to the world and other people.
Oh, yeah. that has been one of the most intriguing things I have found here in my final final years. And that is that it just keeps opening up. All sorts of experiences of our mentality, of our soul, whatever you want to call it, that leave they just have no relation to anything else, kind of their own independent journey into the possibilities of mind itself. And so I would say that the subject itself just couldn't be exhausted. It just keeps opening up and opening up.
Would you say is it a mental experience, or is it a bodily experience, or is it something else?
Oh, it would be purely your own mindset, your own awareness of yourself. It's not bodily. In fact, from my experience, bodies just don't enter in. You're entering into simply states and of consciousness itself, awareness itself. And some of it, as I said, I began to come out from it feeling that the greatest single thing can be states of being that are not related to body or world or anything else. And you say, then what are they related? They're not. They're just, it's a kind of a realm that only forms as we enter into it. So there's nothing we can ever say about it. Because once you return to the ordinary, none of the terms for it or ways of applying it would make any sense. It's quite a unique state of its own. It's not, even to use the term state, I would simply say an unknown factor, which is fascinating. But I guess to some people, might be perhaps disturbing. I don't know, but I look on those times as just opening up a realm of conscious being that is astonishing, just magical.
Are these experiences that you've only began to have in your old age, or do they have any correspondence with anything in your past or your childhood or anything else at all?
That would be hard to say. It just might be that only recently have I had nowhere to turn except within to my own process, and my discovery is just so endless and so awesome. Because up until then, I'm an active part of a society in the world, and things that other people are involved in, and we exchange about them and so on. But there's another realm, as I have found, that just is independent of all that. And I really can't say anything much about it, because it doesn't relate to anything else.
Right.
It doesn't relate to anything other than one's own awareness at that time.
So, but you think that the opportunity to have these experiences does relate to your withdrawing your attention from the world as a result of being older, essentially?
Oh, indeed, I think everything kind of changes. There's a point of similarity, and that is the idea that you discover that everything that grows from every little microbe on up is a form of intelligence. And we were just looking at David Attenborough's, one of his many films last night, and again you discover that the simplest little thing, like a log or a piece of wood or a little weed somewhere, you start, and David Attenborough starts and examines it, it just opens up and opens up. It's a fascinating thing. There again, that's the sensuous, the challenge of it. The business of holding on to that and letting it lead you into some new aspects of existence. So there again, I would certainly, the spell of the sensuous is a fantastic work. And I first thought, well, I know what they're talking about. Now I grow more and more astonished by all that that this contains within it. And here we keep coming across these things that we had no accounting for whatsoever. And if we allow it, that creates a kind of a spell. We have to enter into and become part of that which we then discover or have unfolded for us.
So it sounds as though, if I'm understanding you right, that what you're describing is not so much a state that's separate from biology, but that is as if it's going all the way into biology and through to some inner realm, some realm that is actually, like, I'm seeing like biology in the physical world as a gateway to another world. Is that close to what you're describing?
Well, yeah, I would say that what we think of as biology is a kind of a frozen notion of one little aspect. I'm sure I've mentioned to you the book Original Wisdom.
No.
Original Wisdom is certainly a work that you could gain a tremendous amount from. Robert Wolf, with two F's on the end, Robert Wolf. Lady Jean Liedloff, Liedloff, Jean Liedloff, who just died last winter, and her book, The Continuum Concept, those put together can open up a whole new realm for anyone who can approach them openly. Oh, and a book that came out in 1954 by the two Scottish physicians, Scott Williamson, and Innes Pierce, Innes being his wife, I-N-N-E-S, and spelling it P-E-A-R-S-E instead of C. And if reading those three works, that came, the final edition of that came out in 1954, and it was way ahead of its time. And it's talking about how the earth is a living organism and all the different ways in which the living organism is trying to combat and survive the attack by a terrible disease called the human being.
Right.
And about how, and it, in 1932, I think it was, their first work came out about the earth as a living organism and we humans as a terrible threat to the earth because we don't follow the intelligence of the earth. They have said that we are becoming a cancer on the face of the earth because we're not living for the earth, or in cooperation with it, but have begun to live against it, and we have become a cancer on the face of the earth. Now they said this in 1930 in a work, two very brilliant physicians, and that we could look for cancer to become the most common form of death. And if you look back and you realize that before about 1930, cancer was a very rare thing. That's hard for us to believe now. But, of course, today just completely preoccupies everything. I look at all of these ads in the ARP magazine, Association of Retired Purpose magazine. Cancer just fills it all. How you can, what's happening, and all the scientific investigation of cancer and so on, and it just grows and grows and grows because we don't realize that we have become a cancer on the face of the earth and are damaging it rather than living with it as we have in the past. There have been other periods in history when we seem to have not lived in complete accord with the earth, but and some of them are very old. That's about all. And I'm getting too hoarse, and I'm going to have to just wish you best in it. You might drop me a note or a line and let me know how things are going with your search. I think you're on to something.
Yeah, thanks for talking. I'll just say something. You don't have to say anything because I don't want you to get hoarse. But what you're describing, it seems that it has a lot to do with what you call the biology of transcendence, the blueprint of the human spirit, the book that you wrote, that because the whole universe is intelligence and has intelligence moving through it. I'm getting this idea from what you're describing that of surrendering to biology, that like we are cells in the body of the earth, and the earth is a cell in the body of the universe, and that the alternate way to being the cancer is to actually surrender to the intelligence of biology and let that intelligence guide us, which in my experience.
I was just going to say, before I run completely out of my voice here, I'm getting so hoarse, but the best of all my books came out a couple of years ago, and it really is far. I've come up with a couple of books, I think, since then that were kind of selections from it, but nowhere near it. The one that really does it, the one I would ask that if I were going to worry about being remembered, I would say, remember me, from a book called The Death of Religion and the Rebirth of Spirit. And okay. The Death of Religion and the Rebirth of Spirit. And the byline is A Return to the Intelligence of the Heart. And it's easily, far and away, the best thing I have done. I wish I hadn't kind of clouded up the scene with these last couple of little attempts of mine and left it with this book, because it's the best thing I have done. I've okay. just finished rereading it, and I was kind of astonished at the final conclusions of it. Wow. And I think, well, if all that's true, why am I not in better shape?
Why are you not in better shape?
What?
You mean, why are you not in better shape at 89 years old, you mean?
Yes.
Monkey said to man, I want your fireman. Said to monkey, I want your brain. Monkey said to man, my desire is to be like the mankind. And this was all the monkey said when his world come tumbling.
Monkey said to man, I want your fireman. Said to monkey, I want your prayer. Monkey said to man, my desire is to be like the mankind. And this
this was all the monkeys built. When his word came tumbling down, it's the monkey, and monkey speaks his mind. Now here comes the monkey, and monkey speaks his mind. Now here comes the monkey, and monkey speaks his mind. Was all that monkeys built when his world came tumbling down.
La vie dans la jungle, c'est quand même bien sympa. Des lèvres, l'air de bois, tout pour se des problèmes. Les songes sur les arbres préparent mon beaucoup. Cible de destruction
came